Curve crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten 30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
We are pleased to welcome to the program George Sipple. George covers the University of Michigan and the Detroit Red Wings for the Detroit Free Press. George, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
How are you doing?
Good, George. How are you?
Good.
That's good. George, we obviously brought you on. A lot of people here in Winnipeg, as the Jets season has sort of gone down the toilet a little bit, are putting a lot of their focus onto Kyle Connor of the University of Michigan. He's currently leading the entire NCAA in points. He's had a tremendous freshman year for the University of Michigan. Just how impressive has Kyle Connor been for a very good University of Michigan hockey team?
Yeah, he's been amazing. He plays on arguably the top line in college hockey. His teammates have been really solid, and they've kind of pushed him this year because, you know, going into the season, I guess the book on him was that he was more of an offensive player, not necessarily a two-way forward. And he's really worked hard in that aspect of his game, although, you know, that's not always seen. The stats tell more of the story. He's got 20 goals, 23 assists, 43 points in 24 games. And the next highest player is Jimmy Vesey, a senior forward at Harvard. He's averaging 1.62 points a game. So it wasn't expected. I mean, he came with a lot of hype, a lot of expectations at Michigan. And one of the things that Red Berenson, his coach, talked about is that not everybody can stand up to that to those lofty expectations, but he certainly has done a great job as a freshman.
George, do you see a lot of similarities between Kyle Connor and Dylan Larkin, Detroit Red Wings first rounder, who's having an excellent rookie year in the NHL right now, just won the fastest skater at the NHL All-Star Skills Competition? Do you see a lot of similarities, not just in the way that they play, but kind of their trajectory going into the NHL?
Well, on the offensive side, yeah. I would say certainly you can make the comparison. I don't think Connor has established himself enough as a defensive player to warrant that comparison, though. I was talking to Dylan Larkin yesterday at Red Wings practice before covering the Michigan-Michigan State game, and he was saying he's rooting for Connor to win the Hobey Baker Award, which goes to college hockey's best player. They are good buddies. I think they, a couple years ago, thought they were going to play together at Michigan. Obviously, Dylan only played 1 year at Michigan and proved that that was all he needed. I think it might be a little unfair, you know, to compare him to Dylan right now. Although I did talk to Red recently, and he said he's made great strides in his defensive game.
You know, George, a lot of people in Winnipeg are excited that we have you on because a lot of people want to talk about Kyle Connor. They've been seeing how well he's been doing for the University of Michigan, and a lot of people are starting to ask if Kyle Connor could be in the Jets lineup as early as next year. Is there any indication that Kyle Connor wants to play in the NHL next year, or does it look like he's going to stay with the University of Michigan for at least a couple of years?
I've never broached that topic with him. I don't get the sense that he would be ready to jump right to the NHL. I mean, this is a guy, not to harp on his defensive ability, but he scored 195 points over three seasons with Youngstown in the U.S. Hockey League, and he was a minus 29 over that time. You know, so he's got a little bit to work on before I think he's ready to make that kind of jump. But, you know, the thing with Dylan was he was considered a good two-way player at Michigan, and, you know, he's been able to translate that. I mean, he's, because of injuries on the Red Wings this year, he's been playing on the penalty kill a little bit. So he has that aspect of his game that he can rely on. I'm not sure that Kyle would be able to do that right away. I mean, obviously, certainly he could probably chip in offensively, but do you just want that aspect of his game? I don't know. I think they would probably want him to be a little bit more responsible, right?
George, you know, Dylan Larkin, of course, playing there before Connor, you're going to get those comparisons. But just because they went to the same school doesn't mean they're the same player, and you're kind of pointing out some differences. Is there somebody that Connor does remind you of for those of us who haven't seen him play?
I mean, he's a typical Michigan player in that they really covet skill, and he's really fast. He's got really good hockey sense. I don't know if I can make a comparison on him, but he's basically in the mold of what Red Berenson typically recruits. He's really, really skilled, really high end players. A lot of people in Michigan and the Michigan coaching staff were kind of shocked that he didn't make the World Junior team this year, and that motivated him. He didn't sulk about it. When I talked to him before the Great Lakes Invitational, he said that was a important tournament that he needed to play for Michigan, and he earned MVP honors. So he's basically what Red typically recruits, and I'm not surprised that he's having the kind of success he is as a freshman.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is George Sipple of the Detroit Free Press. We're talking about Kyle Connor and the University of Michigan ice hockey team. George, you know, obviously the Wolverines are having a very good year, number 5 in the nation. They lost last night to Michigan State at Joe Louis Arena, which I'm sure was an energetic contest between the two teams. You know, is the focus right now for most of the players, you know, are they really focused on the Frozen Four as their next goal, as opposed to anything with professional ties to it? I mean, they have a lot of players there. You know, JD Comfer's playing there with Kyle Connor as well. Are these guys just focused on getting to the Frozen Four as opposed to anything starting with their professional career?
Yeah, and the reason that's really easy to do is they haven't been in the tournament for a couple of years, so that's really the motivation. Like you said, they're called the CCM line now. Connor Comfer and Tyler Mott, who's also a Blackhawks draft pick, and Tyler Mott had 9 goals last year. He's got 24 in 24 games this year. That line has been phenomenal all season. They've probably depended on it a little bit too much, but they came into that game averaging 5 goals a game. They were the highest scoring offense in college hockey, and their goaltending has been suspect over the last few years. It looks like it's sort of turned a corner. I mean, even though they lost last night, it was a really, really well-played game. So, I think the focus for all the players right now is to make the tournament because they haven't experienced it before.
You know, George, you mentioned that Kyle Connor needs to improve on his defensive game, even though he's putting up excellent offensive totals, and you're hearing his name mentioned a lot in the Hobie Baker conversation, and it's still early and there's some games left in the NCAA schedule, but would you agree that he is a front runner for the Hobie Baker Award, and who else is in that conversation right now?
Well, that's interesting. We were talking to different people about that yesterday in the press box. And, I mean, Tyler Mott, who scored 2 goals yesterday, one of Michigan's 2 goals, 24 goals in 24 games is pretty impressive. Michigan has had that happen before where Kyle Porter and Chad Kolarik played on a line together, and people worried if they were going to kind of split the vote. But Chad Kolarik told everybody that he wanted Kevin to win, and Kevin ended up winning the award. So I'm not really sure who Red would endorse or if he would endorse any one of the players. Kyle is certainly a candidate because he's leading the nation in scoring, or points per game. Tyler's leading the nation in goals. So, and Comfer's the captain of the team. So all 3 of those guys will be in the conversation. My guess is if Mott continues the way he's playing right now, he's got an 8-game goal-scoring streak, he might be the guy that ultimately gets more of the attention for Michigan.
George, if Kyle Connor faces Hurricane Ditka, who wins? Okay, in all seriousness. No, I know we're going overboard on the Kyle Connor stuff. You also covered the Detroit Red Wings, George, and they are sitting in a wild card spot right now, the first wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Overall performance of the squad has probably been poor, considering maybe expectations of a little bit of breathing a new life into the squad with new coaching staff and maybe some, maybe not hard feelings, but guys like Henrik Zetterberg looking forward to that. Why have the Wings, you know, they're sitting in a playoff position, but why are they at a negative seven goal differential, maybe not performed as well as some expected?
Well, I mean, the next wave after the, you know, Henrik Zetterberg has kind of carried this team offensively for a number of years, and they're getting older, and the next wave is supposed to be Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Tatar, and there have been times where they've struggled to score goals consistently this year. It's something that I talked to them, both of them, about it yesterday. Andreas Athanasiou got called up yesterday. He's going to center their line tomorrow to try and inject some speed on that line, and that might get those two guys going more. It's a little bit of a surprise that they've struggled to score goals as much as they have. And then, you know, at times the defense has been suspect, too many turnovers. And then, you know, Jimmy Howard has had his struggles in the games where Peter Mrazek hasn't played. But you know, overall, I mean, they're right in the hunt like everybody else, which just kind of shows the parity of the league. You know, they could miss the playoffs, or they could make it and go far. You know, you just really don't know what's going to happen. But I think they're going to start leaning on Peter Mrazek even more down the stretch, just because of the way Jimmy has been struggling. And you know, they're starting to tweak the lineup a little bit, given the young prospect a chance to come up and maybe. You know, help like Dylan Larkin has.
George, we've got one last question for you here, and we appreciate you coming on. A lot of people are loving having you talk about Kyle Connor, Jets' top draft pick, and college hockey. A lot of college hockey fans out there. Andrew Kopp is a guy, it was a little bit controversial, I guess, if you want to say that, him leaving the University of Michigan. Red Berenson probably wishes that Andrew Kopp was still in the lineup. Have you had a chance to watch him play with the Winnipeg Jets, and what do you remember most about his time with the University of Michigan?
I haven't got a chance to see. I think he's got like one goal, right, in like 40-something games. It's kind of weird. I mean, Red has kind of had the same thing over the years, that if he thought a guy was ready for the NHL, he would drive him to the airport himself. Jacob Trouba was certainly a guy that Red had no problem seeing leave after 1 year. And Trouba jumped right to the NHL and has shown that he's ready for it. I think, you know, Red would have loved to have Kopp back. I just can't imagine how much better Michigan would have been. I mean, they're averaging 5 goals a game, and then you add him to the lineup, he certainly would have made them even stronger. But, you know, he was a solid player. He averaged about 12 or 13 goals a season. He was just always really solid. Michigan kind of has had a history of guys who maybe have underachieved, or you thought they would do more, having like a breakout year. Like I said, Tyler Motte went from 9 goals to now he's got 24. So I think there was a sense that maybe if Kopp had come back, he would have had that big year offensively. You know, but I can't knock him for leaving. You know, I mean, he didn't play in the NHL, right? He went right to Winnipeg and is stuck, even though they probably thought he was going to chip in a little bit more offensively.
George Sippel covers the University of Michigan Wolverines. He covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Detroit Free Press. George, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Thanks very much, George. Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk about another struggling Central Division franchise, the Minnesota Wild. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, this segment brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio. With 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool, get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off a new membership, visit radyjcc.com/illegalcurve. Hang on, Ezzy. Before you say anything, Richie's fired up about something.
I think we need to ask some questions or point out some facts about Kyle Connor, obviously. He's very popular here.
Sure. Backup quarterback is always very popular,
yes, too. When Alexander Bell invented the telephone, he had 3 missed calls from Kyle Connor. Basically, what I'm going to do is read every single Chuck Norris joke and insert Kyle Connor. I mean, can we calm down here?
We can.
We had the interview. I don't know anything about him. I don't mind finding out about him. But everybody needs to just calm down. He appears to be really good.
Rich, I think you need to calm down.
I think we need to calm down, overhyping these guys. I mean, he might be amazing. I don't know. But like, I think we need to calm down here. I don't mind the one interview with Kyle Connor. I'm hoping we're not having 30 interviews with Kyle Connor for the rest of the year.
Well, I don't think we'll have 30. That may be a little much. But
Drew, I thought Rich was going to read more Chuck Norris jokes inserting Kyle Connor. That was only one. Let's keep going.
No, I'm not reading anymore. There's a lot
anymore
of them here, though.
That's it? Okay. I got to tell you, Richie, a little disappointed. I thought you'd be more fired up about something.
Well, I mean, Drew, you know
what? You said,
yeah,
you know,
I'm with Drew.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed there.
How many more questions
bit
are we going to ask? If Hurricane tame Ditka was against Kyle, who would win? Like, that's what I want to know, after all the questions about Kyle Connor. I mean,
the Bears.
Seriously.
Anyways, Minnesota Wild. You know, this is a team.
Drew, did Kyle Connor eat cereal for breakfast today, or did he have eggs and toast?
I don't know. What happens if you had all three?
All right, let's talk about the Wild.
Okay, the Minnesota Wild.
Kyle Connor's actually gluten-free.
They've fallen out of a playoff spot. They are sixth now in the Central Division, ahead of only the lowly Winnipeg Jets. They've lost 9 of their past 10 games.
Very surprising.
They've lost 12 of 15 games since the calendar flipped to 2016. Here's Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune after the Wild lost to the New York Rangers. Quote, "This team is just a wreck, and the players have no answers. Their under siege coach has no answers, and their GM apparently has no answers, because he has so far declined interview requests from the beat writers during this road trip." Close quote. Here's Ryan Suter, Minnesota Wild defenseman. Quote, "We're a very fragile team. They get one goal, and we kind of go into a shell. And that's a team that has no confidence. We have to figure it out fast, or it's not going to work." Close quote. You surprised? How surprised are you that the Minnesota Wild have fallen on these significant hard times for the past 5 weeks in the Central Division?
Drew, I'm very surprised, because at the beginning of the season, I picked the Minnesota Wild to be in the Stanley Cup Final against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I was very high on the Minnesota Wild, but it's the same old story, Richie, for the Minnesota Wild. This is a Wild team that for 3 years in a row prior to this season, they've been eliminated by the Chicago Blackhawks in the playoffs. So they haven't been able to get over that hump, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And a couple of years ago, if you remember, the Wild upset the Colorado Avalanche in the first round, and they were looking like a team that might go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. The veterans on this team that are getting paid a lot of money, to me, are just not producing. And I said this last time the Jets played the Wild. I'm talking Thomas Vanek. I'm talking Jason Pominville. Mikko Koivu, you know, he's had a good year. I wouldn't put, you know, too much of the blame on him. But there's also a lot of young players on this team that Mike Yeo has really put a lot of faith in that haven't been very good. Mm-hmm. So you're talking the Charlie Coyles, the Nino Niederreiters. I mean, these players have been relatively inconsistent this year. And, you know, you talk about the Wild struggles, losing 12 of their last 15. Mm-hmm. And they might be in sixth in the Central right now. But, I mean, we know all it takes is, you know, is a nice little run and they're back in it. But I also think that what needs to be brought up here is Devan Dubnyk has not been as good as he was last year. Devan Dubnyk came in for the Minnesota Wild.
As he is scoring, they just can't score.
Well, I agree that scoring has been an issue for them as well. And certainly they're not getting a lot of offense from the defense. But Devan Dubnyk was stealing a lot of games last year. I mean, Devan Dubnyk was basically unbeatable for the last couple of months of the season. And now the Wild can't score any goals. And I'm not saying that Devan Dubnyk is having an awful year. I mean, he's still their number one goalie, and he's got okay numbers, and maybe not as good as last year. But as Rich mentioned, some of the guys on this team, and, you know, Zach Parise has been, you know, he struggled a little bit here, but he's been their most consistent forward, I would say. But, you know, they got to get contributions from a lot of guys on this team that have now. And you're talking, Drew, by the way, about a lot of players that have been on this team for a long time now. I mean, Jason Pominville, Charlie Coyle, Nino Niederreiter. I mean, this isn't their first year with the Minnesota Wild. I mean, these are top nine guys for the Wild, and these guys have to start producing.
Literally, as we are having this segment, Chuck Fletcher has been meeting with the media to talk about the Wild. Some updates from that. Jonas Brodin will miss 3 to 6 weeks with a broken foot.
And that's a horrible loss for the Minnesota Wild. I mean, he's a top pairing defenseman with Ryan Suter. So, I mean, that couldn't come at a worse time for them.
Certainly there. Mike Yeo has also received the vote of confidence, quote.
This happened last year. I mean, what's the same story over and over again? I mean, Mike Yeo's job was in question or December, January last year.
Until Dubnyk came along.
They extended him. They not? Or am I mixing up the years in which his job was in jeopardy and they extended him? His job's in jeopardy every year.
I think it was last year, if I recall correct. Don't you remember there was a practice last year for the Wild where he wasn't happy?
Yeah, Adam Oates was actually running the practice.
And there was a practice last year, and, you know, he unleashed a torrent of swears and curses at the Wild, and it was all the news because look at how emotional he is. He's obviously on his last legs. He's desperate, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this isn't the first time the Minnesota Wild...
it was 3-year deals in 2014. So it was the year prior. I mean, is Mike Yeo the problem here? Well, a couple of things I think are the problem. First thing is that you expected young players, as you mentioned, young players to perform better. And when I'm looking at that, I'm looking at Mikael Granlund. I'm looking at a guy with a lot of talent and ability to create. But when you look at the point totals he's put up, it's just simply not good enough as far as I'm concerned. 4 goals and 22 points and 26 points in 51 games. But let's talk about the bigger issue here. I mean, the preventing goals is not the problem for them. Certainly Brodin, they've been shuffling their defensive pairings, but Brodin will be a loss for them. They have a lot of money in veteran players who aren't particularly quick. I mean, let's go through them, and we've talked about it before.
Or good defensively.
Well, I mean, Koivu, that's fair. I mean, some
talking
other guys.
Vanek.
Okay, Vanek, fair enough, Ezzy, but Koivu... I mean, Parise plays with great pace, but he's not like a great skater. Mm-hmm. So Koivu, Parise, okay, and then you have, as he mentioned earlier, Vanek, and you have Pominville. I mean, these are not guys, like a guy like Pominville is not going to create for himself. I mean, Vanek, depending on, he doesn't play with great pace. And Koivu is not the same player he used to be. I think he hasn't been a problem this year. He's been good, but he's not the same player. And he's never the fastest skater. I think he used to be. So you have a bunch of your key players there who are, they don't, the way the game is played now, it's tough for them to be as effective unless they have the help from the younger players, like a Granlund playing with the puck through the neutral zone and creating space. And so if you don't have both of those things going, Jason Zucker shouldn't go. Somebody's not blamed. He can skate. He can shoot the puck. You know, Niederreiter is a guy who has to engage physically. I think overall, when you look at the squad, Charlie Coyle hasn't really become what they thought. There are flashes from him of great play. Mm-hmm. But there are flashes of there are periods when he's not effective. So I think when you look at the squad, they're probably missing that one guy that can really be relied on to create a ton of offense. And they probably have too many guys who are the same or lack that pace. And that's, to me, what a problem is. I still think they'll make the playoffs. I just think it's that lack of big-time guy who will hold them back from beating the top teams, and that's what they've had the problems with Chicago and such.
Richie, if the Wild miss the playoffs, there are going to be major changes there because this is a team that, as you mentioned, has a lot of money tied up in a lot of veterans. Like after Zach Parise and after Ryan Suter, we mentioned Vanek and Pominville, and you almost wonder if Chuck Fletcher makes a move here with Jonas Brodin out of the lineup for 3 to 6 weeks. Can he afford, you know, to not have him in the lineup when they're making this playoff push?
Well, and that gives him some room in terms of the long-term IR, Ezzy. But you have Parise on the books long-term, Koivu on the books another 2 more years after this season, Palmaville for 3 more years after this season, Coyle on the books for long-term, Suter, Scandella, Spurgeon. You just signed Dubnyk long-term. You don't have a second-round pick this year to deal, or a third or a fifth. Next year, you don't have a second-round pick to deal. So where are you going there?
They got to win now.
It'll be interesting times to see how the Minnesota Wild, if they are able to get out of this slide. Let's head to break. When we come back, Marty B. Ron, RDS TSN analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Brings it back in the other direction. You're on. Well, the net, and got trapped out there as he bumps in the corner. Here it is. He puts it in the net.
Welcome to the third hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We head now onto the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Marty B. Ron. You know Marty, of course, from his terrific NHL career. You now see him on TSN, RDS, and the NHL Network. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me. I love waking up in the morning. Well, actually, I'm not just waking up, but hearing Rick Jenneret making one of my most famous save call. I absolutely love it, so thank you.
Always our pleasure, Marty. Thank you for joining us. Want to bring you on, really talk in general about the NHL. I want to start in Montreal, where the Canadiens are in the midst of an absolute free fall, and there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. Now, we knew, of course, that you take Carey Price out of the Montreal Canadiens lineup, and they're losing their best player. You know, are you surprised at just how significant the drop-off has been for the Montreal Canadiens since Carey Price went down again with that, you know, aggravation of the injury, and that they just doesn't seem to be, they seem to be, you know, right on the way to the bottom of the NHL standings?
Yeah, I'm very surprised. Listen, I was one of those that were preaching patience. Listen, don't go out and make moves if you're Mark Bergevin. Patience. This team can turn it around. They have the system. They have the coaching staff that can put the tools in place for them to have success. Mike Condon's playing pretty well. You don't have to go and blow it all up because you're missing your all-star MVP-type caliber goalie. And then, but I did say give that until New Year's, and then at New Year's maybe see how you have to readjust. I do believe that their big win in Boston and at the Winter Classic really had a negative effect on them, because if they lose that game at the biggest stage of the NHL other than the playoffs, that would have forced Montreal to go and really look for answers. No, they win that game, and then it's like, okay, we still can be patient now. We're back on track because Brendan Gallagher came back after being injured, and he was a big factor in it. And now they're at the same place they were 3 months ago, searching for answers, watching every move that Carey Price does on the ice in his tracksuit, and saying, oh, he looks like the right leg is not good, and, oh, he's moving better today. Oh, he's taking a step back. It's amazing the soap opera that this is, but that really is hurting the Canadians all around their confidence, and it's unfortunate, but that is the way it's going to stay for the rest of the year.
Marty, you know, everyone can tell that the Montreal Canadiens miss Carey Price. I mean, he's the best goaltender in the world right now. Won the Hart Trophy, won the Vezina last year. Everyone can see that. And, you know, with Mike Condon in net right now with Ben Scrivens, when you look at the other problems, well, first off, what do you think is the biggest problem on this team aside from the goaltending?
Well, I think that they are playing a game, and they've not really changed their game. Like with Carey Price, you can play the game where you're going to try to get as many scoring chances as you can and give up a lot of scoring chances as well, because you know that the odds are on your side. So they haven't changed that because they're still out shooting their opponents every night. Their Corsi numbers are good. Their scoring chances are on their side. But if you are going to have 20 scoring chances and give up 15 and you don't have Carey Price in the net, you're going to lose the game. You have to play a style of hockey that is going to allow you to limit the scoring chances you're giving up. So maybe you have to only play to get 12, 13 scoring chances, but only giving up 8 to 10 a game instead of going in the 15s and up to 20 scoring chances a game. Most goalies in the NHL, average goalies in the NHL, will give up a goal every 4 to 5 scoring chances. So if you give up 15, you're Mike Condon, you're going to give up 3 goals, and that doesn't win you any game. If you're Carey Price, and the top goalies are Henrik Lundqvist, the Carey Price in the league, they give up a goal every 7 to 8 or 9 scoring chances. So they're capable of facing 18 scoring chances and only giving up 2 goals, and that is the biggest difference for the Canadians right now. They're not scoring. Their confidence is way low. They're taking shots in the net, like meaningless shots, just to be able to say, well, we're creating offense, but that's not happening. And on the other side, that one save a game you need is not there.
And Marty, we were talking earlier about the Jets and the Moose. Both the Jets and the Moose are struggling, actually last in both leagues right now. Jets tied with a bunch of teams. And the question was in the room was, does it have an effect on some of the players, younger players maybe, or the organization as a whole long term? Now, we haven't played the National Hockey League for sure, and obviously you have. Do you think that extended periods of losing or kind of a losing atmosphere in the room for longer periods of time will have an effect on the development of younger players?
Well, I don't think it has an effect if it's handled the right way. I mean, I played for a team here with the Buffalo Sabres that we went through bankruptcy and we couldn't like put a really good team together. We hovered around the 24th, 25th place in the league and could never get ourselves out of it. But the attitude was that as soon as we could get our ownership problems figured out and that we could work ourselves out of this and add a few players, will be in great shape. And we did. They added Chris Drury. They added Danny Briere. They went and picked up players that really made this team a competitive team. But the attitude was, it's not so much on the player. It's just they're playing with what they're given, and that's all they can do. And then I got traded to the Philadelphia Flyers, and we finished dead last in the league. Just to be going to the conference final the very next season. But again, the mentality there is we don't care where we finish. We could be last. We're piling up players. They went and acquired Braden Coburn, Scotty Upshaw. They traded away Peter Forsberg. They got Kimmo Timonen and Scotty Hartnell. Like, they made the moves to look at the next year and 2 years down the road. And within 3 years, they were up to the Stanley Cup Finals against Chicago. So the attitude that you may lose and not have a losing attitude in the locker room is there. It's just it depends if the plan is to have a year like that to move forward, or if the plan was let's make the playoff this year and let's go pedal to the metal. Now that may interfere with the positive attitude that you're trying to instill.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty, of course, had a tremendous NHL career and is now an analyst for TSN, RDS, and the NHL Network. Marty, you know, I look around the league at goaltending, and you know, one of the names you expect to see at the top of the league or in the, you know, the top 5, the top 10, because he's been there for much of the last decade, is Pekka Rinne. Now, I look at the numbers this year. Pekka Rinne down 36th in the NHL with a .903 save percentage among goaltenders that have played 20 or more games. You know, when you've seen Nashville and you've seen Pekka Rinne this year, are you noticing things that he's doing differently that could account, you know, maybe he's got some fundamental issues that could account for the low save percentage? Or is it just maybe, you know, sometimes age and games played are catching up to a goaltender?
Well, here's the thing with Pekka Rinne. I was never a big fan of him. I appreciate his talent and I appreciate the success that he's had in the league. But when you look at his structure and how technically he is in the net, the structure and the technical aspects are not there. It was all based on athleticism, reaction, anticipation. And I think when you get to be 33 years old, I believe Pecorini is 33 right now, those elements of the game drop off significantly from year to year. If you're 27 and you play just loosey-goosey and you're scrambling and diving and making all these spectacular saves, that's fine. It's going to happen because your body can take it. But at 33, you cannot sustain this type of effort year after year after year after year unless you change your style. We saw the Eddie Belfour from earlier in his career being completely transformed to what he was later in his career because he went to the structure and the technical element of his game and really refined those. Patrick Waugh was the same thing. Curtis Joseph was the same thing. So you have to be able to adjust your game when you get to be 32, 33 years old. And Pecorini hasn't adjusted it. He still wants to play the same way that he did and had success the last few years. It's going to catch up to him. And now the age factor and the fact that he's playing tons of games, play 10 games in a row, take one off, play 10 games in a row, take one off, it's going to affect his play. And that's what you're seeing with Pecorini.
Marty, we're going to stick with goaltenders here, and I know you have no problem with that. Maybe Richie will ask you about a non-goaltender, but tonight is a very special night, and there's another special night coming up on Tuesday. I'm going to ask you about another Marty. Tonight, Marty Brodeur is going to drop the puck between the Devils and the Capitals coming up in about a couple of hours here, and then on Tuesday, Marty Brodeur's jersey, number 30, of course, is going to be retired at the Prudential Center. Two-part question on Marty Brodeur. What did you admire most about Marty Brodeur as a goaltender? And in your opinion, is he the best goaltender of all time?
I'll answer the second part first. In my opinion, he is not the best goaltender of all time. And I had to put a list of the top 10 goalies of all time just recently. And maybe I was a little bit biased, and I put Dominik Hasek number one. I just thought that how Dominik Hasek was so dominant. And then I put Patrick Roy number two because he revolutionized the style of goaltending. And then Marty number three, and maybe it's not fair to Marty to think that he played on such a great team. The New Jersey Devils, Jacques Lemaire, the Trap, Scotty Stevens, Kenny Danico, whatever. This was such an unbelievable team to me that he benefited from that. But it's not easy to play when you're only facing 21, 22 shots a game. And Marty did an unbelievable job of doing it. And you will never see anybody being able to do that anymore. Being able to play 70-plus games every year and play over 1,000 games and all that, that's not going to ever happen anymore. The fact that physically and mentally it is so draining, and he was capable of doing both really well, to me is why he's in the top three. There's been so many great goalies around, but I was impressed by the way he played, and he was a smart goalie. I told Chris Kreider with the New York Rangers when Kreider came up in the playoffs and when your conference final, he scored a goal in the very first game he played against Marty and totally fooled him on a shot. He came back to the bench. I said, enjoy it, bud, because now that Marty has seen you shoot the puck, he'll know exactly how you shoot it, where you shoot it, and he will make you look silly by next year because he will have the book on you. And that's what Marty did. He studied the shooters. You're able to score on him the very first time, but then after that, he knew exactly your release, how you shot the puck, and where your tendencies were, and you could never beat him. So he was a great student of the shooters, and that is an advantage that was on his side.
Marty, by the way, you'd be number four on my list.
You know what? Funny enough, Darren Dreger the other day wanted to text Marty Brodeur and texted me. So I answered by, hey, Drag, wrong Marty. And it was so funny, but I'm like, hey, it's nice to be compared to one of the greatest ones. So I'll take that.
Marty, when you were with the Rangers, of course, you played for John Tortorella. And we've asked you about that before when you've been on our show. But assistant coach and his right-hand man for a very long time, Tortorella was Mike Sullivan, excuse me. Sullivan is now the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Can you tell us about him, his coaching style, and the job you think he's done so far in Pittsburgh?
Well, fortunate for us with the Rangers, we had two head coaches. John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan were co-coach, if we can say that way. Obviously, Torts is the head man, but the way they managed the bench, they were split down the middle. Torts had the forwards, Sully had the defensemen, and there wasn't a third assistant on the bench. It was those two. They ran practice together. They did their work together. I totally enjoyed working with Sully late after practice. Every time we had just me and the goalie coach, a couple extra players, and then Mike Solomon was there, we did some drills. I got to be with him a lot more than any other coaches in that organization. I got to understand his philosophy, the way he breaks down tape. One time I sat down next to him, and I just watched him breaking down tape, and he said it takes him about 3 to 4 hours to break down one game, one aspect of the game. If he looks at, wow, does the defensive zone coverage, it may take him like 3 hours to break it down, and then he'll do it again. He's a great student of the game, and I love what he's done in Pittsburgh, because I do believe Sidney Crosby was labeled as a, you know, everybody says he's a crybaby, he whines all the time. But then you had, you know, Dan Bylsma coming up from the minors and allowing Sidney to be still that type of player. And Mike Johnson, or whatever, the last coach there, was, he did the same thing. But Mike Sullivan coached against Sidney, knew the feeling of being on the other bench or with the other team and saying, man, I hate that guy, I hate that guy. So I'm pretty sure he sat down with Sid and said, listen, you want to be better this year? You're going to have to put the work and stop thinking that you're entitled to everything and that the refs should call penalties on you and that you're that great. No, let's work and let's get it done, because I've seen it from the other side of the fence. And now you see what Sidney's been able to do. Mm-hmm. The addition of Carl Hagelin, that was probably a Mike Sullivan call because he had it in New York,
right,
and knew that he wasn't working that time. So I just love what Sully's done.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. Here in Winnipeg, Andre Pavlik has been out of the Jets lineup since November 23rd. He's pretty close to returning for the team. We expect it'll happen in the next week or so. You'll have missed, you know, give or take 3 months. When you're a goaltender and you're coming back from injury and you've been out of the lineup for that lengthy period of time, you know, how many games, how many weeks does it generally take before you feel comfortable being in the net again after that extended layoff?
Well, it always depends on the situation. I believe when you're a player like Andre Pavlik, you probably should go on a conditioning and play a couple of games at least in the minors to get ready. And those two games do a world of good, because the pace of the game is a little slower and the pressure is not there. You just are worrying about your own game, and that's what you do. Win, lose, or draw, it doesn't really matter. But then after, when you get up to the NHL, I believe it takes about 2 to 3 games to feel really the rhythm and your read and all of that to come into play. So you figure 2 games in the American League, 3 games in the NHL, you have 5 games under your belt. That's usually the time frame that by that point it's just you know, riding a bicycle again and you're back to where you should be. But we've seen it with Robin Lehner here in Buffalo. He went down and played a couple of games in minors. He's been playing really well since then. Now, if Carey Price was to come back, I don't think he'll go for conditioning stint. I think he's earned the fact to go right back into action, and it may take him 3 NHL games, but usually 4 or 5 games is where you would expect a goalie to be back at the top form.
Marty Biron is an analyst for TSN, for RDS, for the NHL Network. Marty, really appreciate your time. As always, terrific insight into the league in general. We always love having you on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, thanks, and have a good day, guys.
You too, Marty. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We come back to discuss the struggles of the Canadian-based NHL teams.
Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Very clever from producer Rory. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Struggles of the Canadian NHL teams have been well documented. We'll spend this segment talking about it. This segment, of course, brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation. Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life Or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Gentlemen, you look at the NHL standings, and then you look at the NHL standings based on the entire league, and you got to scroll all the way down to the bottom there to see the Canadian teams, the Jets, the Oilers, the Flames, the Senators, the Habs.
I think we know who the Canadian teams are, Drew.
And the Canucks, thank you, Richard. All struggling this season. They make up much of the bottom 10 in the league. You know, just... is it an aberration this year? Is there something else at play? I mean, what do you make of the fact that all the Canadian teams are so bad this season?
I mean, I think Gary Bettman and Bill Daly were clearly in the back rooms cooking up a conspiracy to keep all the teams out of it.
I
don't know, Drew. They just happened to be poor in the same time. I mean, obviously, the Carey Price injury is a factor. I don't think any of these teams we picked as legitimate big-time Stanley Cup threat. So in this day and age, it's possible that if you're not that big-time Stanley Cup threat, the way the league works and how teams are very similar, you can fall out of it. I just happened to be this year.
Yeah, I agree with Richie. I think, Drew, it's an aberration if no Canadian team makes the playoffs this year. I mean, there's still a lot of hockey to be played. There's still 30-plus games left in the season, so I wouldn't completely write out, especially the Montreal Canadiens. I had two Canadian teams making the playoffs this year. I had the Montreal Canadiens and I had the Calgary Flames. And I know Richie picked the Jets. I mean, it's not because I wasn't hoping for the Jets. I just thought with how good the Central Division is and has been, I just didn't think the Jets were going to make it this year. And who knows? I mean, they still have a mathematical chance. It's not looking really good right now. Maybe they can pick up a win tonight against...
Like, no, they don't even have a mathematical chance anymore.
And you look at why it bothers Canadians so much when there are no Canadian teams in the playoffs, because when the first round of the playoffs start and there aren't any Canadian teams, it just doesn't seem right. I mean, there's seven Canadian teams as opposed to 23 American teams. So
it doesn't seem right. We've never experienced it.
Well, I mean, how many times in the history of, let's say, the post-expansion, post-1967 NHL, I mean, we're not factoring in the original 6 years when there
were.
We
can ask Drew about those. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, Drew can tell us about.
I remember when the Winnipeg Victorias won the Stanley Cup in 1897.
And I remember you were telling us last week about seeing Charlie Chaplin live, which is incredible. But, you know.
Do you know the entire world was in black and white back in those days?
It's unbelievable.
Everything black and white. They didn't invent color until later.
Yeah, CYMK wasn't invented until like 1970 or something.
Didn't you try and go to a game with
CYMK?
Drew?
CYMK.
Yeah, the color scale.
Sorry,
cyan, yellow, what is it, magenta? What's the K stand for?
Where did you pull that out of?
I don't know. I mean, I'm in the marketing communication.
Oh, here it is,
world.
CMYK. That's right.
What does the K stand for?
I'm not sure.
What do you mean you're not sure?
It
just doesn't say?
True. I mean, what am I, Wikipedia?
I don't know. Ezzy's the one who pulled this out of somewhere. Like, where did that...
It's not Ezzy's fault. When you guys went to a Bomber game this year, Drew, you showed up on Osborne to go to attend the game.
You've used that joke more than once, let me tell
K
you.
K is actually black.
Really?
Yeah, because the K in black.
Why wouldn't they just say B for black?
K is black. Eh?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But we'll have to get maybe a graphic design professional on the show next week,
Drew. We're going to ask Chris Zelkovich next segment about the ratings.
About
CMYK? About CMYK. So I think it's actually, it's CMYK.
What are your thoughts on magenta, Richie? Do you have an affinity for magenta, or are you kind of magenta neutral?
Well, you know, this is the thing, though, about all the teams. I think when you have Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver has, you know, you have McCann, you have Virtanen, you have young players there, you know, you have Hutton, some guys to build around. Calgary, of course, is Monahan and Gaudreau, and then, you know, Brody and Hamilton, some of the young guys there. Edmonton obviously has, you know, those seven big-time guys. So you have that youth, okay? And then you look at the Jets. I mean, the Jets obviously have some young pieces who can work. I mean, all of these teams, I mean, in the NHL, like, there's nobody, and even the Leafs obviously looking better with Nylander and Marner and all that stuff. And then the Habs have Price. I mean, none of these teams you think, oh, man, they're going to be years away from contending or 4 years away from contending. So I think this just happens. And it's a storyline. Sure, it is, because this is, I mean, we haven't seen it in many years.
Yeah,
and it's certainly going to affect ratings and interest in the playoffs 100%. And it And the fact is, not only are these teams going to miss the playoffs, it's not as if, like, if you look at the Western Conference right now, all the teams are out of it, in my opinion. The Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, with Jets are out of it. And if you look at that, this is February 6th. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not end of March figuring out that they're out of it. That's an early time. Now, it's possible one of those teams makes a run. And I think, it really, in reality, it would be one of Calgary or Edmonton. And that's a big run against Anaheim or San Jose. Okay? Montreal, yeah, the Eastern Conference, a little bit more.
Anaheim's playing great hockey right now.
I know they are, exactly. So I think it's very unlikely any of these teams. And it's very early for there to be that lack of interest in the remainder of the season.
So you think the Oilers...
So that's not only going to affect playoff ratings, Drew. It's going to affect the ratings in March and April.
Sure. I mean, do you think the Oilers are the team? There's a lot of talk, you know, now that McDavid's back.
They're not making the playoffs.
No, I mean, are they going to make up? I mean,
which team could make a run? Is it Calgary? Is it Edmonton that you can see making a run?
I mean, both of those teams, Drew. Calgary is 10 points back of Anaheim.
Yeah.
Edmonton has played two more games in Calgary and is 10 points back of Anaheim. They're both 11 points back of San Jose. Okay? And sure, Nashville's, they're only 9 points back of Nashville. You have Minnesota in the middle there, too, and I think they're going to rebound. I just don't see it. So I guess if I had to pick one team, I would probably say Calgary, but I don't really
clutching
think
at straws.
Yeah,
you say that?
I think so.
And guys, there's so much parity, as we know, in the NHL. Parity seems to be the buzzword every week here, but it's really true.
But is every there that year, much parity well, this year?
Well, there's. I think there's more parity because the bottom teams aren't
there's
as bad as they
year,
were
right?
last year.
Well, I'm saying
so. There's more teams that are in the middle, actually, as opposed to having a couple teams at the top. Like you had the Rangers winning the President's Trophy last year, and then you had the Sabres and the Oilers down there. I mean, the point is, Drew, every year there are a few teams that surprise us, three or four teams. This year it's Florida, it's New Jersey, it's Carolina. Carolina's in a playoff spot right now. I mean, Carolina, as far as I was concerned, was going to be a bottom five team in the NHL, and that's no disrespect to Ron Francis and Bill Peters and the entire team, but I mean, it just wasn't a team that you were considering to be a contender or even a playoff team, but I wouldn't be surprised if next year four or five Canadian teams make the playoffs. The Oilers are going to be a year older. If you have a full year of Connor McDavid, I think the Oilers have a way better shot at making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Calgary Flames, as Richie mentioned, you've got Gaudreau and Monahan. And, you know, sure, they might lose Yuri Hudler, but it's a very good defense there. They got to address the goaltending. Rich mentions Vancouver. A lot of good young prospects there with Virtanen and Horvat. And you know,
Brock Besser.
And Brock Besser playing at University of North Dakota right now. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets, I think, you know, with the right moves, they could be back in the playoffs next year. I mean,
the point is you have veteran squads that don't have as much young talent, you know,
right.
Like Anaheim, you know, some young defensemen there, Izzy, but your overall young talent up front, that they're going to eventually come back to the pack and there's going to be a switch. But that takes a lot of time.
I think back to what we were talking about before. In Canada, we're a hockey mad nation. And when there aren't any Canadian NHL teams in the first round of the playoffs, in the playoffs period, it just isn't something that I think a lot of people are comfortable with. And people want to watch Canadian teams and hope for Canadian teams because a Canadian team hasn't won the Stanley Cup since 1993.
Yeah, when I say like, it takes a lot of time, like I mean, you could have a switch in the playoffs next year. But I mean, for the Anaheim Ducks to become that knock contender, which is eventually going to happen in the next 2 years or so, three years, then you're going to see the hop over. You're going to see the switch. But, it, you know, it could happen in 1 year, but... For a consistent basis, like Anaheim always being contending here, that takes time.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Chris Zelkovich to talk about the impact of zero Canadian teams in the playoffs and what that's going to mean for the television ratings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Chris Zelkovich. You can read Chris's work at Yahoo Sports. He covers the sports media here in Canada. Chris, good morning and welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be here.
Chris, we were talking last segment about the fact that there are zero Canadian-based NHL teams currently in a playoff spot. If that continues to, you know, into the playoffs, if, you know, April, whatever the end of the season is, the first week of April comes along and there's no Canadian teams that are going to qualify for the playoffs, is that an absolute apocalypse when it comes to TV ratings in Canada?
Well, apocalypse might be a bit of a strong word. Rogers has a pretty long-term deal on this NHL thing, and they've got plenty of time to make up for bad years, but it certainly would be, a semi-disaster. Canadian teams drive the ratings. You can just see it every week when games are involving only American teams. They usually draw pretty poor audiences, and certainly historically, it's the Canadian teams that drive the playoffs. And unfortunately for Rogers, this is where you make your money, is in the playoffs. And they may not be making any money and probably will be losing some this year if this continues.
You know, Chris, you mentioned that the Canadian NHL teams drive the ratings. How much do you think the ratings are going to be negatively affected if it turns out that no Canadian teams or just one Canadian team makes the playoffs?
Well, I think you could just look back to last year. When the Canadian teams were in the playoffs, and it was a pretty good year for that, the games were averaging about 3 million viewers. Once the Canadian teams, the last Canadian team dropped out, you went down to 2 million and less, and by the time you got to the Stanley Cup final, where a Canadian team probably would have been averaging, who knows, depends on which team was there, 5, 6 million viewers a game, you were doing about 2 million. So it's a pretty substantial drop in ratings. I mean, you're looking at, I would say conservatively 50% less, and in some cases, like 90% less.
Chris, just for, our knowledge, how does the sales for TV commercials and such work for the playoffs? How much of that is pre-sold, and how much of that is held back based upon who or which teams, are remaining when the playoffs begin?
Yeah, they don't sell it all out, and there's a good reason for that, is because if the Canadians
don't get crazy now,
or some other team makes it to the final. Suddenly the price of those ads can go up quite a bit. And if you've pre-sold them, you're stuck with charging somebody, I'll just make up a number, $10,000 a minute. Mm-hmm. When you might be able to get $20,000 or $25,000. So networks hold back a certain percentage of their ad inventory in hopes of cashing in. Well, if there's no Canadian teams involved, then, there's going to be no cashing in at all. And, of course, the other danger for a network is that they make these deals based on an expected rating. Who knows how they figure that out. But if they're promising advertisers, for example, let's say an average of $3 million a game through the playoffs, and they only get $2 million, well, they owe the advertisers some compensation for that. It's usually not cash, but it's free advertising somewhere down the line. So that ends up affecting their bottom line, too. So it can be a pretty pricey hit if the ratings don't come anywhere near what they were expected to be.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Chris Zelkovich of Yahoo Sports, talking about television broadcasting in the NHL. Chris, obviously the All-Star Game occurred last week, and it got relatively great numbers here in Canada and south of the border. Yeah. In Canada, a 33% increase over last year. In the U.S., it was up 24% and set a record on NBC Sports Network. Is that, to your mind, a function of the John Scott story, or is that a function of more people tuning in because they were interested in the three-on-three concept?
I mean, I'd like to think it was the three-on-three that pulled people in, but, I think your average hockey fan... It might the three-on-three might have drawn some interest, small interest, from the average hockey fan. But I think the John Scott story just created so much publicity that I think a lot of people tuned in to see what was going to happen, the same way a lot of people are going to watch the Oscars this year for the first time in a decade to see what Chris Rock's got to say. You know, there was a story there, and I think people love good stories. And I think probably John Scott drove most of that that increase. And one thing to point out, by the way, is that although the numbers were up substantially this year, they were down a fair bit last year. So you're not looking at a huge increase, so, you know, over normal, just a huge increase over what they did last year.
Chris, what did you think of the production quality of the All-Star game? Because I really enjoyed watching it. I know Rich and Drew, you know, talked about for weeks how they weren't going to watch it, but I watched almost all of it, including the skills competition. Maybe it's just because I don't have a life and all I do is watch hockey. But
we can confirm that.
I thought the city of Nashville did an excellent job, and again, I thought it was really fun to watch on TV. What did you think of you know, the different production elements?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about All-Star games and you know, big events like the Super Bowl and the World Series and the Stanley Cup Finals is it gives broadcasters an opportunity to sort of, you know, show off their new toys because they're getting a bigger audience than normal, and they can afford to do that. And I mean, I think the broadcasters, I didn't see the NBC Sports broadcast, but certainly what CBC Rogers did was really first rate. I mean, they played the John Scott story for the most part pretty straight and pretty, you know, pretty interestingly. So, I think they did, you know, they do a great job. It's funny, a lot of people who maybe just don't like the way the new regime is doing things on Hockey Night in Canada have, you know, complained and said that that's got something to do with the ratings drop. I really don't think so. I mean, the way hockey is done in this country is pretty much, you know, the gold standard around the world. So I don't think the production values or even the people involved have a whole lot to do with it.
You know, Chris, you wrote for the Toronto Star for many years. A question about sports coverage, and obviously we're seeing the landscape certainly changing recently and in the post-media cuts. How do you see the game's sports coverage, maybe beat writers, and how do you see that all changing over the next 5 to 10 years in the way that people consume their information?
Well, I think the coverage is going to go pretty much the way the rest of the world is going, and I think you probably are going to see more and more of the viewers, you know, watching on their computers as opposed to on their TV sets. But I think the actual way the game is presented, you're going to see new technology. There's no question about it. I mean, Rogers and TSN are investing a fair bit in this 4K technology that supposedly is gives us even better and clearer pictures than HD did. You know, whether or not that's the new answer, I don't know. But I think you're going to see more and more of those kinds of things. They keep talking about all these wonderful features like the referee cam and the helmet cams and sort of bringing the viewers onto the ice and onto the field, you know, and you see these things are pretty cool when you see them, but you also notice they seldom get really involved in the actual production of the game themselves. So I don't see a huge change when it comes to that. As far as your coverage goes, the economy will probably dictate that more than anything, and certainly if you're a newspaper reader, I think you're going to be facing some pretty big changes in the next few years, and God knows what that will be.
Is there a concern at all, Chris? You know, these rights holders paid big money, you know, kind of all these leagues long term for TV rights, and some of them, NHL has digital rights included, but there's been an issue in terms of, at least for newspapers, as you referenced, being able to convert the advertising from the paper copy to the digital version. Is there going to be a problem with the television versus the computer consumption of that product?
I think there will be. It probably will be mitigated a bit in Canada because basically the people who own the TV channels,
right,
i.e. TSN and Rogers, also happen to own a cable company. So if they find that people aren't subscribing to the cable packages, well, all we can do is then is raise your internet rates to make up for it. So they'll be able to weather it a bit better than in places where there, you know, there isn't such involvement. But yeah, I mean, they're all facing this, and I think, you know, when you look at the way it's going, everybody is making long-term deals now. I mean, the NHL's 12-year deal is, I guess, the longest one in the business, but there are a lot of 5, 6, 10-year deals being made. And the question they, you know, all the networks have to be asking themselves is, you know, did we buy something that maybe we should have gone a little short term on, mm-hmm. considering the way things are going? But I think in Canada, the major networks are pretty much, the sports networks anyway, are isolated from this cord cutting and things like that, because they kind of own the whole pipeline.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. Of course, it's Super Bowl weekend, and tomorrow evening the Panthers and the Broncos will meet in Super Bowl 50. You know, what is it? This isn't NHL related, but what's a good number for Super Bowl viewership in Canada, tomorrow? Yeah, what sort of number would CTV be expecting to get?
Okay, well, last year was a little over 8 million when you counted CTV and RDS. Wow. And I mean, the story this year, I think, is just as good as the story last year, maybe better in some ways. So I would imagine that they will match that and maybe even exceed it, depending on the quality of the game. And pretty hard to imagine them matching the quality of last year's game. When you get anytime you get a game that goes down to the last second, you're going to keep the viewers hanging in there, which of course ups the average audience. If Caroline does what a lot of people think they're going to do and runs away with this, you may see the numbers drop, but I think the interest is just as high as it was last year.
Chris, more importantly, what's the food situation at your house for the Super Bowl?
I'm a little different than your average sports fan here. We're probably going to have something like rainbow trout with roasted potatoes and green beans.
Classing it up. It's nice to see that somebody's going to, you know, class it up like that and not not just gorge yourself like the rest of us are going to do.
It's Taco Bell for a legal curve here.
Chris Selkovich covers sports media in Canada. You can read his work on yahoo.ca. Chris, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Take care, Chris.
Okay, bye.
Let's head to break. One final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Nigel Lawrence. Two shows tonight, tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. Caller number 3 right now at 780-1290. You're going to win 4 tickets to see Jordan Wellwood this coming Wednesday at Rumors, February the 10th. That's caller number 3 right now at 780-1290.
Jordan's a funny guy. I've seen him many times at Rumors.
Yeah.
So you're going to definitely enjoy that show. Good guy, Jordan.
Absolutely will.
Rapid fire.
A quick little rapid fire. Super Bowl version of rapid fire. Cam Newton, Peyton Manning, they are the Super Bowl quarterbacks for the Panthers and the Broncos. Which players are the NHL equivalent of Cam Newton and Peyton Manning?
Ooh, I like it. Because you've got the veteran, future Hall of Famer in Peyton Manning looking for another Super Bowl. And then you've got the young, upstart Cam Newton looking for his first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Peyton Manning, Jaromir Jagr, for Peyton Manning. And Cam Newton, I'm going to say Tyler Seguin.
I like the Tyler Seguin, Cam Newton one. So I'm going to leave that. I would agree with that.
Okay.
I think Manning is more so Joe Thornton. The difference is that Manning has that one championship. Thornton and Manning have been dominant players during the course of their career. Now, I know Manning could be considered arguably the greatest of all time. I don't think he's the greatest, but he's one of the best. Thornton is one of the best passers of all time. Both of them really haven't had the success and the playoff level that you would have expected from the talent level that they have. So Thornton and Manning, for me, I like to say...
He's got a Super Bowl.
I know.
It's not a perfect parallel, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm admitting that. There's that Super Bowl difference. I like the Sagan and Newton one. They're kind of brash. They're so good. They draw attention. They're worth watching.
Ron Rivera is attempting to become the fourth person ever to win a Super Bowl as a head coach and a player. Who is the current best NHL head coach to never have won a Stanley Cup?
Well, I mean, you know, and you think about that one, Drew. You can't go to Bruce Boudreau. I like, you know, I just don't think his playoffs, he hasn't performed well enough in the playoffs to make that claim. And Hitchcock has his one, although it's been a while, you know, so you kind of go throughout the league. I'd say Barry Trotz probably.
I was going to say Barry Trotz. I think I'd throw in Lindy Ruff in there too.
Yeah, Lindy Ruff's a good one too, is he?
Yeah. And I mean, Richie predicted Dallas Washington in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that prediction is looking pretty darn good right now.
The Carolina Panthers joined the NFL as a part of expansion in 1995, of course, alongside the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You certainly seem more into the NFL today than the NHL, Drew.
No, how do you? What do
you think? Don't you agree?
Yeah,
yeah, he agrees.
Yeah, you're pumped up. You're pumped up for Super Bowl
50. I always enjoy the Super Bowl. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you guys. Watching the Jets night in, night out, watching that game yesterday, somewhat demoralizing.
Keep going.
2 years earlier, in 1993, the Florida Panthers joined the NHL as part of expansion. Who is your favorite player to have been drafted by the Panthers in the expansion draft of 1993?
True. Wow. That
are we
is
talking
intense.
About the Carolina Panthers?
No, we're talking about the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, because the Carolina Panthers came in the late 90s.
Carolina Panthers came in 1995.
Mid-90s.
Yeah, I said that
well,
in the question.
I think Kerry Collins and Kevin Green are two of the best Carolina Panthers. We're talking about the Florida Panthers.
Florida Panthers. I'm asking you about the Florida Panthers in the expansion draft.
Was John Van Beesbrick in that one?
He was
the first pick.
He was the first pick in that one.
I would say
Scott Mellenby?
He was
I'm not looking at a list right
You're
now, by the
way. You're not looking at a list. He was there as well.
Okay, the first pick was JVB.
Yeah.
Ezzy, I want you to pick the fifth pick. My favorite would be Darren Puppa. Remember Darren Puppa?
Yeah.
Buffalo. Tampa Bay, yeah. Lefty goalie. That'd be for me. But can we just quickly go over the top five picks of that expansion draft?
Please.
Florida Panthers and Anaheim Ducks.
I know how much you guys enjoy this.
Nostalgic. JVB number one, Van Beesbrouck.
Yeah.
Drafted from?
The Vancouver Canucks.
How do you know that?
I'm looking at the list.
Oh. He's on the Rangers for so many years, okay? Geehee Bear, who was covering the Ducks game last night. He has a studio analysis or outside analysis because they do the show outside. Glenn Healy number three. Mark Fitzpatrick, number four. So four, and then Darren Puppa, number five. So all goalies, of course. And then Tugnutt, six. So all goalies in the first six picks. Which I'm assuming was a rule or the way they did it that way. I don't know.
Shout out to my man, Gord Murphy, who was also drafted by the Florida Panthers.
Your man, Gord Murphy. I'm sure he'll be glad to know that. Injured Broncos tight end Jeff Huerman was a highly regarded hockey prospect, so much so that he left his family's home in Naples, Florida, and moved to Michigan to play for the legendary CompuWare Junior team. Which NHL player do you think would make the best NFL tight end?
Well, Bufflin would be the easy choice there.
Yeah, he would be the easy choice.
And J.J. Watt also is a big hockey guy.
Sure, and growing up in Wisconsin there, he's
a... Yeah, Buff would be an awesome tight end. Like, it would be nice to see how he would do in the NFL, because he's quicker than you think, too, right? I think you could maybe throw in a guy like Milan Lucic.
Yeah, that would be another great one.
He's a big boy.
You're good at this, Ezzy. I think you know what? I think Zach Kassian would be a good tight end in the National Football League. He's just crazy enough.
Yeah. What about John Scott?
Well, he'd be a big target. That's certainly the case. You know, might not be able to get off the line, get off a block very well, but he'd certainly be a big target
in
the red
zone.
Yeah,
we'll go with Buff for TE.
Super Bowl predictions, guys. Panthers and the Broncos tomorrow.
I think Carolina wins 24-14.
I know everybody's taking the Carolina Panthers, but I'm a big, huge Peyton Manning fan, as you guys know.
Did we?
I honestly didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure you're not that big of a Peyton Manning fan.
I'm a big Peyton Manning
fan. I'm pretty sure you haven't watched more. You haven't watched one full Peyton Manning game in your entire life.
What?
There's no chance.
Come on, Richie. You're
there's no chance.
Richie, hang on. Ezzy was watching Peyton Manning back when he played for the Baltimore Colts.
How can that be the case when a couple of years ago at the Super Bowl, I was eating Peyton Man wings? I'm going to say Denver 28, Carolina 20.
Really? It's going with the upset.
Peyton Manning gets another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That would be the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Broncos all the way, man.
You know, I think that for whatever reason, my brain tells me that the Panthers are going to win, but my heart's saying Broncos 17, Panthers 13. I think that defense has got some things in store.
I guess you're taking the under then.
I am taking the under in that case. That's certainly the case.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
You can throw that back at me when they lose
and
by four.
Cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
Well, I'm going to go off the board here. Everybody's criticizing the new NHL.com. I actually like the new NHL.com.
It's terrible.
I like it. I'm going to give it a cheer. I know nobody else likes it.
How do you use it?
It will take time. There are things to work out, like ranking 1 through 30 on the team so you can see what place they are in the standings and certain things. But I think overall it's moving towards a better model, and I like the way that MLB is involved in this. I like the way MLB does their website. I'm sure Michael Remus would agree with me. So I'm giving it the new
Remus
side
has
of
been
cheer.
All over Twitter criticizing it.
Yeah, I'm saying but that MLB
sure,
part
yes,
of it.
MLB part
Richie,
of it.
We all use NHL.com on a probably daily basis,
yes.
I would say. I was trying to just figure out what the score was of a game. I couldn't even figure out how to check the score, so it's going to take me a while. I mean, I'm sure in the long run it's going to be good, but I mean, I may be a little bit slow with technology, though.
Just going to set slow.
Yeah, I'm still using a flip phone, so.
Just going to set slow. Cheer Marty Brodeur and get on with it.
Exactly. I'm going to cheer Marty Brodeur. He's dropping the puck tonight between the Devils and Capitals, and his number 30 is going to be retired on Tuesday against Edmonton. So, for me, he's the best goalie of all time.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. Big thank you to our guests, Chris Zelkovich, Marty B. Wrong, George Sippel, and Terry Fry. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Rory, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel.
Go Broncos!
If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Moose and Jets hockey later this afternoon on TSN 1290.
As long as we set the yardage, the team will be all right.